Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. At a CNN town hall event for presidential candidates in New Hampshire last night, Harvard student Anne Carlstein asked Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders about the rights of convicted felons.
Senator Sanders, you have said that you believe that people with felony records should be allowed to vote while in prison. Does this mean that you would support enfranchising people like the Boston Marathon bomber, a convicted terrorist and murderer? Do you think that those convicted of sexual assault should have the opportunity to vote for politicians who could have a direct impact on women's rights?
Sanders responded by talking about the importance of encouraging all Americans to participate in elections and condemning voter suppression. And then he said this.
I think the right to vote is inherent to our democracy. Yes, even for terrible people. Because once you start chipping away and you say, well, that guy committed a terrible crime, not going to let him vote. Or that person did that, not going to let that person vote. You're running down a slippery slope.
CNN's Chris Cuomo, who moderated the event, gave Sanders a chance to walk back his answer.
You're writing an opposition ad against you by saying you think the Boston Marathon bomber should vote not after he pays his debt to society, but while he's in jail. You sure about that?
Well, Chris, I think I have written many 30-second opposition ads throughout my life. This will be just another one. But I do believe, look, you know, this is what I believe.
Sanders also added that people in prison are, quote, paying their price to society, but that should not take away their inherent American right to participate in our democracy, end quote. Joining me now in the studio to dive into this is Joe Battenfeld, political columnist at the Boston Herald and host of the eponymous Battenfeld on Boston Herald Radio. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you.
You see what I did there with eponymous. We got the dictionary people coming up later, so I'm practicing. Also with me is Abigail Forrester, executive director of the Center for Teen Empowerment, which hires and trains teens to be community organizers. Abigail, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Should convicted felons be allowed to vote, even while in prison? Is the right to vote inherent to our democracy, as Bernie Sanders said, even for convicted murderers, rapists, and terrorists? Where should we draw the line between who can and cannot vote? You can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. All right, Abigail, let me start with you. What was your first reaction to hearing what Senator Sanders said last night?
Well, my first reaction is I do believe that there should be a right to vote for those who are incarcerated. I think what we tend to do is underestimate and the opportunity for individuals who are incarcerated to be still a part of the civic process. I, too, was incarcerated. I did 10 years of incarceration as a first-time offender. And understand that even in the system, there are individuals who are engaged in what is going on in the external society and should be able to make a contribution as a citizen, still a citizen of the society.
But you were in for a nonviolent drug offense.
Yes.
I mean, even for the Boston Marathon bomber.
Well, so here's what I think. We can use an outlier as an example to sort of classify the whole, right? The Boston Marathon bomber is probably a 0.0% of like those who are incarcerated. So it's easy to sort of highlight that one individual and try to sort of lift that individual up as if they are representative of the whole of those who are incarcerated. We know that in incarceration, there's been a swelling incarceration over the last 30 years based on nonviolent crimes, right? And so the majority of those who are incarcerated are either nonviolent or have been incarcerated wrongfully because of mental illness or substance use. So the thinking about the Boston Marathon bomber is a way to sort of like, again, classify the entire population, which I don't think is fair. Before the right to vote in Massachusetts was taken away, I was actually a part of voter registration drives in the institution to say with inmates who said, you know, we still want to have a voice in the civic process.
As it's pre-2000, before the constitutional amendment in
yes.
Massachusetts took that away. How about you, Joe Battenfeld? Yes or no, Jahar Sanayev voting?
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why some Democrats are so terrified of Bernie Sanders winning the nomination is because of of his positions on issues like this. This is politically a terrible issue for him and for Democrats to say that the Boston Marathon bomber has an inherent right to vote and participate in the democratic process is just abhorrent to many people. And even convicted murderers, convicted rapists, I mean, they lose their you lose your freedom in jail. And one of those freedoms is the right to vote. And so I think, you know, Sanders and other Democrats who support this are going to be in big trouble. And I think, you know, compare it to somebody like Pete Buttigieg, who was also asked the same question last night. And he basically said right away, he said, do you think, you know, convicted terrorists should have right to vote? He said, no, very straight. And that is the correct answer, the politically correct answer, certainly. And I think, you know, I just think that this whole issue, you can talk about nonviolent offenders or people who have been released from prison. That's a different issue. But people who are currently in prison, especially on violent offenses, or murderers, rapists, that kind of thing, I think you're going down a bad slope if you start letting those people vote.
Yeah, Buttigieg sort of took the model similar to what we have in Massachusetts, right, which is that when you're in prison, you cannot vote, but when you get out, the rights can be restored. We've seen other states move in that direction. Florida, most recently, restoring the voting rights for many convicted felons now that they're out of prison. Gentlemen, as you might expect, the lines are filling up because folks feel very strongly about this issue. Let me begin with Patricia in Rockland. Patricia, what say you?
I think Senator Sanders is right, and I think at a time where so many states are disenfranchising people, we need to have as many people in the process as possible. And using the marathon bomber, I mean, that's obviously that's going to get people riled up and deservedly so. But the thousands of people who are in there for nonviolent offenses, I mean, democracy is really important. And that means including everybody, even if it's not palatable.
Patricia, thanks for the call. So, Patricia, she's sort of making the same argument, Abrigal, that you did earlier. We can pick an outlier. We can pick an extreme example. But I do think the particulars matter, right? I mean, could you see a dividing line where maybe many prisoners can vote, but we have a separate category for murderers, rapists, terrorists?
That can potentially exist. What I would like to take a look at is prior to the Constitution being changed, specifically in Massachusetts, what was the impact of the voting of those who are incarcerated, right? This discussion around levels of offenders in incarceration, voting or not voting, has just been an issue that's just coming to surface because we are now in a state in this country where we're classifying people and putting certain people in the corner and trying to make those folks irrelevant, right? When I look at incarceration, I also look at the fact that there are disparities for specific ethnic groups and populations, right? Specifically, those who are black and brown. So the impact, the disparate impact on voting in regards to who has access and how many people can vote to make a difference in the civic process, there's disparities, right, based on incarceration. So I do not think that the right to vote should be taken away just in the sense of someone being incarcerated because we have other systematic issues and problems that create disparities that folks can leverage as an opportunity to push forward the officials that they think are best.
And just to fill in some data on the disparities that you're talking about, we were just talking about the census in the previous segment, and the Census Bureau says that in our national population, we're about 13% black, but the Federal Bureau of Prisons says that 37% of inmates are black. So that's roughly three times that rate. And so, Joe Battenfeld, I think that when folks criticize the idea that prisoners cannot vote while they're in there, they're saying, you know, maybe some of these people have committed crimes and part of the punishment should be losing the right to vote, but that that justice hasn't been meted out evenly. What do you say to that?
Well, that's an issue for the criminal justice system. It's not really a voting issue. I think as far as voting goes, you know, like I said, when you lose your freedom, that's the ultimate price that you pay, I would think. And one of the freedoms is the freedom to vote. And once you start, you know, mucking around with that and allowing some people to vote maybe and others not to vote, I think you're going down a bad slope, like I said. And it may be you can definitely debate, you know, the disparity, racial disparity that's going on in prison, but that's not should not be an issue for voting.
We're talking about voting rights for felons in and out of prison with Joe Battenfeld, political columnist at the Boston Herald, and Abigail Forrester, executive director of the Center for Teen Empowerment. And you're welcome to give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Alicia is calling us from Watertown. Alicia, what do you think?
Hi, I worked in a prison system in a dog training program, and I worked directly with inmates. And I find that everything is working against them. And there's a lot of people, as many people have said, that have not had education, have not had proper representation in court. And as a result, they're in prison for a long time when someone who has more money or more opportunity would not be there for as long. I think that they should have the right to vote, especially because of mandatory minimums and the big business that prison is.
Alicia, can I ask you, do you find then that the inmates you're working with would make responsible, informed voters? I mean, are they engaged in the news while they're doing time?
They are definitely watching TV, and they were really active in every single thing I asked them to do, to whether it's reading about meditation, yoga, anything that I could recommend that would help them be a better person in training their dogs, they were willing to do. They're not the evil people that people are thinking they are. People make mistakes. And a lot of the time people end up in prison because, again, they haven't had the opportunities they needed. So I think mandatory minimums and all of the things that are keeping people locked in this system, as well as a system that makes it so hard for them to be successful once they get out, is completely broken and unfair. And yes, that needs to be mended, but it doesn't mean that these aren't people that should have some input. I will say that I do think there could be a divide with sexual offenders, because I do have strong feelings about that, and I didn't work directly with them, nor was I willing to. But there are a lot of people in prison for offenses that are, you know, drug offenses, stealing things that are nonviolent. They're not like these horrible, villainous people that people make them out to be. I never felt at risk with them, and I'm still friends with one of the inmates that's gotten out and is doing amazing work now, and I've done everything I can to help him because no one else is.
Alicia,
so
thank
it's
you.
It's not just black and white thing.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call and for sharing your experience. Let me get in one more while we're at it. Mark is calling from Maynard. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question on what you thought the impact might be on municipal elections, where if students in a town, say like Walpole or Concord, if inmates were allowed to vote and voted as a block, could they skew the election results in smaller towns? And could conceivably an inmate be elected to a town office in a small town like that and create all sorts of issues regarding that? I'll take your answer off the air.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for the ring. It's a good question, Joe Battenfeld. No. Let's take it up. I know that I was reading up on some of the history of it today, and this did come up in the 70s. There was a prisoner, I think, in Concord who did get on the ballot in a small local election, mm-hmm. but this was one of the concerns that slowly moved us toward that ballot measure in 2000. What about Mark's concern there?
I mean, I think it is a great question. A place like Concord, where you have a prison there, if people are allowed to vote, could that skew local elections? Yes, it could. And imagine people in Concord feel like they would be singled out because they have a prison in their town or a place like Boston where there's a prison. Not so much impact there because it's such a big city, but a small town like Concord, it could definitely have a big impact.
So what about the mechanics of that, Abigail? Because one of the things that people would wonder is, would folks in prison be voting within the town? In other words, would that count as like you live now in Concord, you're a Concord resident or you're a Walpole resident while you're in jail, or would you be voting by absentee ballot from wherever you had been sent? I mean, these things matter, right?
Yeah.
The way it's executed. What do you think?
Yeah, so a couple of things to this. The sort of getting on the ballot is an interesting concept, because when I was incarcerated, there were actually two people who conjured up enough votes to get on the ballot. So I would say like that would be a limitation, because it wouldn't make sense for someone incarcerated to be on the ballot, to be elected for a position while they're incarcerated. So I would say that I do support not having inmates be able to sort of garner signatures to get on the ballot. The piece on where they vote, when voting rights were established, you voted an absentee ballot from your previous address. From your address previous to incarceration. So you didn't vote as a Concord resident or a Walpole resident. You voted from the last address you had when prior to becoming incarcerated. So your vote still goes back as an absentee ballot to the district that you're from.
And maybe that's one sort of guard against overpopulating the vote in one specific town. Let's take a couple more calls. Mary is in Andover. What do you think, Mary?
I just think about the creation of the Bill of Rights and how it was designed to protect the innocent and not punish the guilty. And the idea is that we'd rather have a guilty person go free than an innocent person be incarcerated. And yet we know we have a lot of innocent people who are incarcerated, or a lot of people who are incarcerated on nonviolent crimes. And doesn't this fly in the face of how our legal system was created? Isn't it better to have, you know, to let people vote, you know, the minute one innocent person isn't allowed to vote? Doesn't that sort of undo our system?
But suppose, Mary, that somebody makes a confession. I mean, Jahar Tsarnaev is the admitted Boston Marathon bomber, right? There's no doubt in that case. Mm-hmm. And his crime is particularly egregious, right? Really, even for the marathon bomber.
No, I would agree with your guest who said that, no, there could certainly be different degrees. But my greater concern is saying no for everyone when it's not that simple. This isn't an either-or thing. It's far more complex. And to throw out that red herring of the marathon bomber, that oversimplifies a very complex issue and makes it very difficult to discuss it in an effective way.
All right, Mary, thanks so much for the ring. David is calling from Boxborough with an interesting question about the broader implications here. If you restore voting rights, where does it stop? What are you thinking about, David?
What I'm curious about is currently, if you're a convicted felon, once you're released, you are not allowed to own a firearm. If you want to restore one right, are you willing to restore other rights, such as allowing violent felons to now start buying firearms? Personally, I'm a firearms owner, and I really would prefer not to see violent felons able to go out to the gun store and purchase firearms.
David, thanks for the ring. It's a good question. We'll take it up with our guests. Abrigal, what about that? I mean, he's pointing to another precedent where, there's a Second Amendment constitutional right to bear arms. At least that's how the Supreme Court has interpreted it most recently. And so, you know, what's to say that, we shouldn't also take away some other rights like the right to vote? That's part of your punishment.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're mixing somewhat apples with oranges in that case. But over time, even if you've been incarcerated, there are certain rights that you can get restored, right? So over time, I don't think that's the same circumstance in which when we look at the right to vote, right? That's a civic opportunity. It's not something that is injuring anyone or has the potential to injure anyone. The right to bear arms or have a firearm is a total separate issue. And so I wouldn't convolute the opportunity for inmates to have the right to vote and be civically engaged, primarily too around issues that impact them. So a lot of times in specific states, commissioners who are over institutions that are running in a very disparaged way are appointed by elected officials, and there's no responsibility to those inmates who are incarcerated and don't have access to be civically engaged. This could change the whole sort of context of how folks who run for office and sit in positions actually look at themselves as being either a part of corrections or operating from a punitive standpoint.
You know, Joe Battenfeld, I have to say I'm a little surprised, frankly, by some of the calls that we're getting. I am not just cherry picking here. Mm-hmm. I kind of expected that we would get more really angry people because the marathon bomber really inflicted an incredible wound on this city. And so even if you support the idea of restoring voting rights in the abstract, to take it to that specific example, I would think is just so difficult to get your head around. The reaction is so visceral. Are you surprised a little bit by what we're hearing right now?
Well, a little. It is Massachusetts, but I mean, I think in general, the voting population, if you ask or did a poll, I think they would not favor certainly giving voting rights to the Boston Marathon bomber or murderers or serial killers or rapists or sexual offenders. I think that most people would be would think it's, like I said, abhorrent to allow somebody like that who's not participating in the free society. Now, when you're in prison, you're not participating in the free society necessarily. Your freedoms have been taken away. And one of those freedoms, like I said, is voting.
Let's take a couple more calls while we still have a little bit of time. Michael is calling from Cambridge. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I'd point out that if you were in pre-Civil War south of the United States, you'd find that advocating emancipation of the slaves would have been a felony. In Virginia, until 1967, it was a felony to marry across racial lines. Once you start determining who picks and chooses, where the particular issues are, those issues may be different in the future. I'm not suggesting that Tsarnaev's acts are going to be acceptable in the future. Nevertheless, the society as a whole benefits from having the votes and the voices, the ideas of people who are throughout society. And to say that you're going to have somebody picking and choosing among them, on balance, it's not about the rights of the person in prison. It's about the rights of the society as a whole to receive their input and to hear what they have to say. Thank you.
Michael, thank you for the ring. Let's take one more. Kelly is in Milford. What's on your mind, Kelly?
Hi, sir. I'm calling. I just have a little different perspective. My father actually went to jail for felony check fraud for a couple of years in his 20s, and his rights weren't restored till he was in his 40s. I don't think that he deserved the right to vote while he was in prison for what he did. I do think, though, that his rights should have been restored once he was released from incarceration.
Kelly, thanks for your perspective. So how about that, Abrigal? There's a somewhat surprising perspective, someone whose family has been personally touched by incarceration. Yeah. But even Kelly says, you know what, my dad did a bad thing. He was in jail. Wasn't even a violent crime, but that should have been part of his punishment that he couldn't vote.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think folks have a right to their perspective and opinion on this issue. I think that what we're really talking about is how do we keep in perspective a democracy, right, and give people actually hope and don't disparage them by putting them away and having them feel like they don't have a right to be civically engaged, right? I think the civic engagement process is the quintessential part of democracy. And to take that away because you did something and you're incarcerated, I just don't think that it's justified, you know. And I think that there are long-term impacts on looking at inmates or folks who are incarcerated a certain way that disconnects them from society, and then sort of say, okay, we're going to restore this now, but actually what you've done is from a mental standpoint is you've said that we don't accept you anymore. And so we're not about banishment. We're a society about a democracy, about being inclusive. And more and more, we're losing that inclusive idea based on the current sentiments of the government.
And Joe, let me just return to the idea that our caller Michael was talking about. He points out that, you know, standards and laws can change over time. I think perhaps the current example in Massachusetts would be legalization of marijuana. For example, we may have people who were in prison for, you know, a marijuana crime now who, you know, if they were caught today, would not go to jail for that same crime, right? And so, you know, should folks like that not have the right to vote? I think that's a very specific example, but that's something that I think our listeners are thinking about, apparently.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair point, and I think that there are different degrees of people in prison, certainly, and certainly there are plenty of people in prison who didn't do what they were convicted of. But again, you're talking about voting rights, which is a separate issue. Voting rights are something that should be sacred in this country, and to just allow anybody who's in prison who forfeits their right to be, forfeits their freedom, I think is another thing.
I'll point out that we're only a handful of candidates at that town hall in New Hampshire last night out of the 19 in the Democratic field right now. So it'll be interesting to see where the rest of them come down as this race goes on. And we'll check in with you, gentlemen, as we find out the answers. Joe Battenfeld is a political columnist at the Boston Herald and host of Battenfeld on Boston Herald Radio. Joe, thanks as always for your time.
Thank you.
Abrigal Forrester is executive director of the Center for Teen Empowerment, which hires and trains teens to be community organizers. Abrigal, thanks to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call, but give it a try. 617-917-4717.